This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. 5 years, $500 billion, the deaths of more than 4,000 Americans and many times more Iraqis later, we are still feeling a kind of shock and awe. Though perhaps not the kind intended by the Pentagon when it rained bombs on Baghdad on March 19, 2003. Then we did feel that kind of awe, especially we in the media, like Wolf Blitzer.
I think it's fair to say in the 30 years that I've been covering these kinds of stories, General Shepard, I've never seen anything like this of this kind of magnitude on live television, maybe not even on not live television.
This week, the crew here at OTM combed through our voluminous coverage of the Iraq War and found that our archive runneth over with examples of media manipulation, credulity, and courage. In the end, we managed to assemble a show of highlights to illuminate where we've been and perhaps where we ought to go. At least we ought to pay attention, and that's getting harder. TV news watcher Andrew Tyndall says that in the last 15 weeks of 2007, the networks collectively spent just 4 minutes per week on the war.
But let's start at the beginning, shock and awe. When the bombs fell, the media were, to put it crudely, stoked, and they showed it with escalating displays of patriotism. Cable news had the martial music and the flag pins, and the news anchors who saw the Iraqi street through rose-colored glasses when American soldiers trudged in.
Basra has been the focus of a lot of attention, and there were concerns that a humanitarian disaster could be provoked. But, John, look at this. Little children and the soldiers giving them candy.
Yeah.
Greg Mitchell is the editor of Editor and Publisher and author of So Wrong for So Long, How the Press, the Pundits, and the President Failed on Iraq. He says that in the war's early days, none of the mainstream news outlets could resist getting on board with the story of the war.
And besides the graphics, the headlines, and the flags that were jumping out of you from the screen, you also had a tremendous imbalance in terms of the voices that were allowed to speak on the air. You had no really anti-war voices or even people raising questions about the war.
On the subject of boosterism, some of the uncritical embrace of the mission pretty quickly leaked from the red, white, and blue cable news sets to the embedded reporters. We're going to have more on the embed program coming up next. But for the moment, just listen to this piece of tape from CNN's Walter Rogers early in the war.
So we pulled back for that. And as I say, when we were pulling back, we could see the area we had fought through 2.5 days ago. And when we pulled back, there were lots of...
Greg,
right.
We...
Well, not only we, but we fought. I mean, that's the shocking thing about it. I'm not sure that Walter picked up a gun there. I hope not. But certainly the impression was that they were, let's say, deeply embedded with the troops. Fortunately, they did not meet so much resistance and that the war phase did not last all that long. But that, of course, as you know, led to a misleading impression of what would follow.
If it's true that the media were slow to pick up on the realities of the situation in Iraq, it's equally true that at the same time, they were under intense pressure from the administration and from the political right to find more good news and stop reporting so much bad news. We were hearing a lot about turning points at various stages of the war. Tell me about the reporting on so-called turning points.
Well, one of the first one was the death of Saddam's sons, which was supposed to crush the spirit of the insurgency. And then we had the capture of Saddam himself, which was supposed to be a true turning point when we took Fallujah pretty much by destroying it and supposedly had wiped out the main viper's nest in Iraq. That didn't quite happen. Then we had the death of Zarqawi, whose face, dead head was put on the front pages all over the country. That was supposed to crush the spirit of al-Qaeda. That didn't happen. There has been this continual trumpeting of turning points. And here we are 5 years later, and we have more troops in Iraq right now than we had 3 or 4 years ago.
I'm speaking to you on Wednesday. In this morning's New York Times, on one of the inside pages of the front section, I saw a photograph of an Iraqi who had died on the operating table as a result of wounds inflicted in a car bombing. It was a very grisly picture, and I did a kind of a double take because I haven't seen a lot of grisly images coming out of this war, and I wonder why that is.
Well, the loss of images from this war has really been one of the more shocking things. We have seen almost no graphic photos of American dead or American injured. We've seen Iraqi dead. The photos exist, but they're not published. Now, there are reasons for that. For one thing is the Pentagon has said that it will not allow or discourage the media from using images of dead or wounded Americans until family members have been notified. Well, this is a process that takes 2 or 3 days at least, and by that time they're no longer news photos, so they lose their value as news. The other factor, which many people are aware of, is the ban on showing the coffins or caskets of the soldiers coming back from Iraq. We do see images from funerals. So it's not completely antiseptic, but given the carnage, it is kind of staggering to reflect on the almost total lack of really graphic images of Americans suffering.
I remember so vividly the first day that the New York Times listed the dead on an inside page when it had ceased to be page one news. It was quite early into the war. Now coverage on cable television, at least, is quite low. A year ago, it was 24% dedicated to the Iraq War, and now it is just, Greg, 1%. What has happened?
Well, for one thing, news organizations, which are under financial pressure, have withdrawn a large number of people from Iraq. Secondly, of course, we had the political campaign starting. It's much sexier. I think media feel that there's a fatigue factor among the public. But people who think that's a dead issue are really fooling themselves. Just imagine if there was a debate tomorrow night between John McCain and either Clinton or Obama. Can you imagine what that debate would be like on the issue of Iraq?
What you've described and what you describe in your book is a media that as an institution was insufficiently skeptical, was insufficiently critical when there was evidence of bad faith by the administration, and now is paying insufficient attention to a war that continues to rage. After 5 years, have we learned nothing?
We have seen a tremendous number of very tough stories from very brave reporters in Iraq that I would never discount. And I think there has been kind of a sense among some in the media of a certain amount of shame, a certain amount of guilt about what they did before the war. And I think the reporters have tried to do a tougher job since then. But I have to say that in looking at the fifth anniversary coverage, one thing that's been missing in the hundreds of articles and all the hours of TV coverage is reflection on the media in the run-up to the war. So I think that perhaps individual reporters tried much harder to get it right. But I'm not sure at the top whether there is the sense of this really one of the greatest black eyes in the history of journalism.
Well, Greg, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Greg Mitchell is editor of Editor and Publisher magazine and author of So Wrong for So Long, How the Press, the Pundits, and the President Failed on Iraq.